You are now joining Children of the Wash.
That's right. It's the number one podcast in the galaxy for all things Star Wars television. I'm your host, Alex Maxwell, and joining me as always is
Mac Lacey. We are finishing up our Attack of the Clones breakdown. So if you aren't aware, we've already gone through the first three quarters of Attack of the Clones, breaking it down scene by scene, specifically examining it through a lens of how it's going to inform Boba Fett's character, because the Book of Boba Fett is coming out in December. So kind of just preparing for that, diving into his childhood and everything. And then, of course, talking about everything else in Attack of the Clones. But we're finishing up today. This is the last quarter.
It's super exciting. If you're new to our channel, our podcast, we cover everything. We started as The Mandalorian Watch, and then we transitioned into changing our name, Children of the Watch, a Star Wars show, to better cover the upcoming live action TV shows. But we're also covering The Bad Batch as well. And you can join us every Sunday night at 7 Eastern Standard Time for a live stream as we break down that Friday's episode, and then it will of course be on your podcast app, and you can join us on Twitter and Instagram for more fun conversation at COT Watch. And we have a Patreon, patreon.com/TheMandalorianWatch, for extra bonus content as well and access to our community Discord. I think we should just go ahead and jump into part four of Attack the Clones. Here we go. Padme starts off by saying she has been dying a little each day since Anakin came back into her life. They are captured. Things are not good. They are all about to die as they are getting ready to be escorted into a huge arena on Geonosis. And basically, Padme just confesses her love for Anakin.
Yeah, I've been dying a little each day. Since you've come into my life. I don't think that's the romantic thing Padme thinks it is.
Yeah, like at the beginning of that, I'm sure Anakin was like, oh, this is like, not going to end
sorry,
well.
Sorry, I will I'll leave you alone then.
My bad. Like, oh, I'll stop texting you. Okay. but then, I mean, she says, hey, I love you. I'm sure Anakin's very, very surprised. Anakin then reminds her that they would live a lie, that they cannot do this. They said that they would destroy them if they have this relationship. And she's basically like, YOLO, we're about to die anyways. So why not?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it makes sense.
You almost made me spit coffee across the room. taking a sip when you said that. But, yeah, I mean, this is the moment they're deciding that they're okay with kind of, you know, never being able to reveal every aspect of themselves to the people around them.
I mean, they're about to die anyway, so why not just like let's kiss?
Yeah, I guess.
And then they do. As they're being escorted out into the arena and the love theme is playing. Now, I will say, like, from this point on, this is my favorite part of Attack of the Clones.
Oh, yeah. I mean, who doesn't love everything after this? I mean, it's all excitement and, yeah, it's just pure fun.
Yeah. So, some of it is the best Star Wars content that we have. The love theme, I kind of noticed this when I was taking the notes on this. The love theme sounds a lot like when Luke and Vader battle in Return of the Jedi. It's like almost like a motif of it. It's like spinning off of it a little bit. You know, it's a little more lovey, obviously, yeah. Like a romantic love, but it sounds very similar to Luke and Vader battling on the Death Star.
Yeah, it's just such a, that musical motif is such a sweeping piece, you know, it's all scale. It's just makes everything feel so big and, epic, I guess.
I like it. So they march out to these huge columns out in the middle of the arena. The Geonosians are pumped. They can't wait for some executions. There's nothing like a good execution on a Sunday afternoon, according to the Geonosians. And they're pumped. They're pumped.
Yeah, I mean, they have particularly theatrical methods of execution. So
yes, they do. You think this is like on their TV? Do you think they live stream this on YouTube?
on like their version of the HoloNet or whatever.
Yeah.
Hive mind or whatever.
The hive net.
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah. Okay.
They seem to have a very enthusiastic execution culture on Geonosis.
They do. They really do. So when they get to the columns, Obi-Wan's kind of just looking at them like, he just has this face of like, of course. And Anakin says, we decided to come and rescue you. And Obi-Wan says, good job. And which I love sassy Obi-Wan.
Yeah, that's when he's at his best. You know, he can get stuffy at times being so kind of rigid and always being sort of the Boy Scout. But then when he lets that that side come out, it's always.
Yeah, when he tears you down with his words, there's nothing better. that means he really loves you. Method of execution by Geonosians. We've got a rhino come out, which is turns out to be a friendly rhino. So I like this rhino. We've got a giant bug.
Right. That's Arclay or Acklay. I only know from Battlefront 2, the original.
There you go. There you go. And then we've got a Nexu. I do remember the name of that one. It's like this, it's a cat rat combination. It's got like a rat tail, but it's like a cat like thing with like eight eyes.
It's got the wide, really wide. It's got like a hammerhead shark shaped head almost, but more pointy, you know, because it's got that super wide mouth.
Yeah.
With teeth. Pretty gnarly.
If you found yourself on Geonosis, you're about to be executed in front of everybody on Geonosis. If you had a choice of which one to fight, which one are you fighting, Mac?
The rhino, for sure.
The rhino?
I think that's mostly a matter of getting out of the way.
it's like the video game thing, right?
It's a very charge-based assault, right? You know?
You just wear it out. Like, get in front of a wall, jump out of the way.
Yeah.
It hits the wall. You do the thing over and over again until it's dead.
Yeah, I still don't think I stand a chance, to be clear. But if I have to pick, that's a clear pick for me. Because cats, I know what like a 2-pound house cat has done to me. Just I've been absolutely ripped to shreds by a tiny kitten, right?
So, do we need to talk about this? Are you okay?
No. Right. Just in the past, like, as a child, being scratched up and everything. And I could not imagine what a cat-like creature that size could do. And then a giant bug. No,
Okay. So you got the rhino. I'll take the giant bug, but because it seems a little slower, right? Like it. At least if I can find myself a spear, I've got a chance.
It's all about reach with that because it's got the long.
Right.
Little pinchy things.
Right. the Nexu though, I'm dead.
Yeah, no. Under no circumstances.
Yeah. I'm dead. So Padme basically when she's being marched out to the column, she conveniently hides a hairpin, I guess, in her binders, which I don't know why they didn't like search them at all, but
they were in a rush, man. The show must go on.
That's right. Hey, these Geonosians want their execution.
they're thinking showmanship.
Yeah.
gotta keep things moving, you know?
That's true. They're on a tight schedule. She's already worked her way out of the binder. She's climbing up to the top of the column. And then the games begin. The rhino charges at Anakin. He jumps over onto the rhino. The Nexu climbs up, scratches Padme's back, and above on the perch, young Boba Fett and Jango Fett watch. And Boba is really into this. And again, I think we mentioned this in part two of our breakdown. The environment in which Boba is being raised, he's being subjected to a lot of real life action and violence. And that probably informs a lot about who he is as a bounty hunter.
Yeah, I mean, he really kind of got started off on a really bad foot in life, I think, ultimately, if you're looking at what you actually, you know, want life to be for a person. He's just around death and destruction so much so often at such an early age, you know? I mean, he's like rooting for these people to die that he's never met. Well, one of them, I guess, but
here's my question for you. Do you think Django was like, yeah, I want Boba to see all of this, to experience it? Or do you think it was more of, I only trust myself, so I'm taking him everywhere I go?
I think it's both. I think one of those two things go hand in hand for Django, yeah, because he can only trust himself, and he's, you know, just trying to make his way in the galaxy. Like, I think this is the only option for parenting either way. Like,
yeah,
you know, I think he actively wants to instill the skills and the attitude necessary for, in his mind, his son to be able to make his own way in the galaxy when it comes time, you know, when he's his own person. But you know, that just, maybe you could wait until he's not a child, until he has
or at least stay on Slave One.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it begs the question of, how was Django raised?
There's evidence he's a foundling.
Right.
Den, Death Watch came and found him. That's also a pretty gnarly culture to get started out in, right?
Right.
As a child.
Yeah.
You would tend to think that the Mandalorians that take foundlings probably make a lot of orphans.
Yep.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, like, I would not be shocked at all in canon. You know, because I think there's some stories about Django, about how he was raised and Jaster Meril and all that stuff, but that's not technically canon, so we don't actually know the true story. I would not be shocked if, like, a Mandalorian killed his parents and then took him on.
Exactly. Yeah. That's kind of the world I envision too, and all that.
I kind of want that story.
I do too.
I want that story. That would be cool. So Anakin, like we talked about, tames the rhino. He's kind of convinced this rhino, like, hey, we're friends, we're buds. Padme jumps on, pecks him on the cheek, and they ride off while Obi-Wan is trying to spear the bug to protect himself.
Padme also has one of the most gratuitous, like, costume alterations to write into a script. She just, like, has a midriff shirt made for her. Like, that's unnecessary. That seems like something that, like, Michael Bay would write into a script.
Yeah, doesn't actually seem very George Lucas at all. I think that was probably a Rick McCallum thing, right?
Like, maybe. Yeah. It that seems like a kind of a coked up choice to make. Which, that's Rick. Rick, it's Rick. Is just the physical embodiment of.
Honestly, though, Rick is probably the perfect person to produce the prequels, because it's like, he was just like, yeah, whatever you want.
He was not in a mindset to say no to nothing.
Let's do it. It is kind of an odd choice, but so they're on the rhino, and then Obi-Wan can't tame the bug at all, so he jumps onto the rhino too. All three of them are on the rhino. You got your big three for this trilogy all together. And then up above on the perch, Newt Gunray orders Django to finish Padme off, okay? And Django doesn't move. Obviously, Django is taking his orders directly from Count Dooku.
Right.
And then below, the droids come out of the arena and surround Padme, Anakin, and Obi-Wan. And then behind Dooku, this is where it starts to go, oh yeah. We see a figure emerge, and he's walking into the tunnels, and then suddenly a purple blade ignites right in front of Django. Django, he kind of jumps back. He reacts. He's kind of caught off guard. And to me, that kind of informs what happens later, right? Like, I think Django's a little embarrassed in front of his son, right?
Yeah.
Like, he reacts well. Like, he doesn't act scared, but he's like...
somebody got the drop on him, and he's not a person who's used to anybody getting the drop on him.
Right. And then we see lightsabers just fill the stadium, and 12-year-old me, because this came out when I was 12 years old, I was like, oh my gosh, this is incredible.
Yeah, there was nothing cooler than that as a kid. Just seeing a sea of lightsabers. Like, that's always something you had imagined, because in your neighborhood, you know, when you're playing Star Wars with your neighbors, there's always just a bunch of Jedi going on adventures and stuff. So you've like built that up in your mind, and then to finally see it on screen as a kid, it was a big deal.
It was pretty cool, like just to see all the different Jedi doing their Power Ranger poses with their lightsaber. I like
Oh yeah. You could tell that starting in the background, they had they definitely had a focus on the Jedi stunt training on characters who would be in the foreground.
Yes. Yes. Then behind Mace Windu, super battle droids emerge, and this is our first look at really super battle droids, and they fire at Mace, and he's backing up, you know, blocking all the shots, and then Jango takes the opportunity to shoot his flamethrower at Mace. Like, he already knows, like, okay, this is the most dangerous Jedi out here. I'm going for him.
Right.
And so
which is a good call, because that's true.
Yes, and so he fires his flamethrower at Mace. Mace jumps off the perch. His cloak is on fire, and as he's falling, which is just so cool, this is what makes Mace Windu one of the baddest Jedi of all time. He's like taking off his cloak as he's falling, and then he gets down, and he's like, he's just so samurai, you know. And that's partly because, you know, Samuel Jackson is a big fan of samurai movies and stuff. Like, he just knew how to play this part.
Sam Jackson was the perfect Mace Windu.
Yes.
There's a reason that Mace Windu has a purple lightsaber, and that's because it's Samuel L. Jackson's favorite color, and he wanted it that way. he has some initials carved into the hilt of his lightsaber that he wore on set as well, that are pretty funny if you know about that. But
I know that, like, for whatever reason, I'm not exactly sure the origin of this, but there's been like a big push lately towards like a Mace Windu, like returning from the dead type thing. And I don't really want that. Like, I don't want Mace Windu like surviving episode 3, but I am totally down for like anything to do with Mace Windu. Even like, I would love a young Mace Windu show.
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. You could cast a new actor.
Yeah.
Kind of like you did with Solo. And I would love to see that.
Like,
see him studying Vapad, and which is form 7 of lightsaber combat.
You could even do like have Samuel L. Jackson in it, like almost like a Book of Boba Fett type thing, which we're imagining it'd be like he's doing something in the present, like which before he died or something. And then there's flashbacks and stuff too, because Samuel L. Jackson looks great. I mean, like we even saw what they did with him in Captain Marvel. They made him look younger and stuff. So why not?
Yeah. He can be in there. No problem.
I mean, he could even do like the flashbacks too. I don't know. Like, that would be, I'm all down for it.
Yeah.
So he jumps off into the arena, and then down below we get that Jedi battle charge of all the Jedi rushing towards all the droids, and man, it's so cool. And then we get some Jedi from the Backstreet Boys. I don't think that's actually true, but do you remember that rumor?
No.
That was like a thing.
Like, this is news to me.
Back when I was like a kid on the force.net, on the message boards.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. On the forums.
Yeah. On the forums, there was a lot of, like, I remember there was talk that the Backstreet Boys made like an appearance in this scene or something as like Jedi.
Prince William and Prince Harry as stormtroopers in The Force Awakens or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Same sort of thing.
Ooh, that's awkward now. And so Anakin and Obi-Wan get new lightsabers. We get to see Anakin with a green lightsaber, which is cool. And then Anakin jumps into a chariot that Padme is leading, and we see this very cool scene of them just mowing through droids. And then above, we do see, like, George Lucas makes an emphasis on showing Boba watching this. Like, he is watching all of this, which I think is very important. Again, like, we get the sense that there is a a real animosity between Boba and Jedi Knights.
Yeah, because, I mean, just at the age he's at, I don't think Boba could possibly understand the intricacies of, like, the conflict that brought us all to this situation. He's just seeing a bunch of people with laser swords are trying to kill my dad.
Yep.
And my dad's fighting against them. And that's how he understands that conflict. And that gets embedded in his mind the rest of his life, I think.
100%.
At least until kind of his turning point, maybe, which was the Sarlacc. But
right. But even then, maybe after that, he still might really be fond of Jedi.
We don't know how new Boba Fett really does with Jedi. I guess.
Yeah, because
He
was not there when Luke showed up.
Right.
Which that would have been interesting. Like, because he's like, wait a second.
That lightsaber before.
You're the reason I went into the Sarlacc.
Right.
Yeah, it was Han that hit him, but still, like,
but with that lightsaber. Yeah.
It was that whole situation. I mean, he did fight Luke in that. Yeah.
Yeah. But then the spear thing. Yeah.
Right. So one Jedi jumps up to get Dooku. Like, he is like a very eager Jedi. He's going to end the Clone Wars before it even begins. He's going for Dooku. And then he is shot to death by Jango immediately. Like, the Jedi is able to block a couple of shots, but Jango's such a quick draw.
Yeah.
And so quick with his shot, he takes out that Jedi, and that Jedi falls to his death. And then we see the twirl by Jango, which we see later in The Mandalorian, that Boba does after taking out the stormtroopers.
Yep.
I thought that was a nice callback to this scene.
Yeah. I mean, that's who trained him, so it makes sense.
And then below, we see the Rhino chasing Mace Windu, and Jango realizes that, okay, this is his chance. Like, above, Jango's keeping his eye on Mace Windu. And once Mace is distracted by that Rhino, Jango immediately goes out to fight Mace, because he's like, okay, I can take him on. Mace is able to basically redirect the Rhino towards Jango when Jango gets down there. The Rhino basically runs over Jango and destroys his jetpack, which our jetpack theory is true.
Yes. If you're unaware, basically every Mandalorian's doom is anytime they put a jetpack on, because it's just asking to die. We see in so both Jango and Boba.
Yep.
Their jetpacks get taken out in some way before their demise, right? So leaving Jango relied too much on it for mobility. That's how he kind of countered the Jedi's mobility. Jetpack's gone. We see what happens. Same thing kind of happens with Boba. We see it in the Clone Wars all the time. Like, the amount of jetpacks that Ahsoka slices sending Mandalorians just falling miles to their doom.
It's incredible.
Yeah. So it holds water.
It's called the Rising Phoenix, right? Like, that's what the training of the jetpack is.
To the Children of the Watch, at least.
Children of the Watch.
I feel like that's maybe a Children of the Watch specific.
That's what they call it.
Terminology.
They need to really work on their training protocol there, probably with the jetpacks, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I wonder if, so Din's is made of pure Beskar.
So he's good. He's safe.
So I think we can rest easier with him, because a lightsaber is not going to be able to just, you know.
Right.
So.
Right. So the Rhino is charging at Jango, and he's shooting at it while he's backing up, and then he dives out of the way and kills the Rhino, which there is a parallel between Jango killing this Rhino and Din killing the Mudhorn in Chapter 2 of The Mandalorian. I feel like.
First time the Mudhorn showed up, I immediately was brought back to Attack of the Clones.
Yeah. But then Mace is also a warrior. You know, Jango's not the only warrior here. Like, Mace has killer instincts, like, for real. He knows that, okay, this is my chance to take Jango down. And Mace Windu just starts charging at him. And Jango can't do anything because his jetpack doesn't work. So he's just backing up, firing, and then Mace cuts his head off, clean off.
Right. And that's the end of Jango.
We were told this, I feel like, from a listener. If you pause the shot just at the right time, you see his head, the shadow of his head flying out of the helmet.
Yeah.
So yikes. Yeah.
Bummer. So Jango was always my dude when I was a kid. If I wasn't like a Jedi or something, I was Jango. I was always super bummed about that. I'm like, I only get one movie with him? Come on.
Yeah. Well, and then, you know, again, the camera switches to Boba watching, and what do you do as a kid? Like, you're a 10-year-old and you see your dad get his head chopped off. Of course the Jedi are going to be bad guys to you. Of course you're going to be a punk.
Right.
Like, and growing up, you're going to be a punk.
The life you live, Jango's like the only other consistent person that Boba hangs out with. It's not like he has other family or, you know, a group of children his age to hang out with. Like, Jango's his whole world, you know?
Right.
And like, his whole world is built on everything Jango's taught him, which is bounty hunting and the, you know, the way of war.
And, you know, we'll get to this. We're thinking probably in August, we're going to pick back up our Book of Boba Fett rewatch when the Bad Batch concludes, and we'll get to the Clone Wars episodes that have to do with Boba Fett. But Boba, I just wonder what it's like for him seeing all the clones, seeing his father's face everywhere.
Yeah.
What that is like, what kind of experience, how that takes you out of, you know, like you see someone like Rex or just any clone and you think, oh, I can go to that's not my dad. Never mind.
Right.
Mm. And even when he grows up, he sees his father's face in the mirror.
In his face.
It's, yeah. I mean, that.
I wonder how much Boba knew about all of that, and was he seeing clone troopers and being like, that's exactly what I'm gonna look like one day? You know?
I'm sure. And then, I mean, even with the Bad Batch, we're not exactly sure who Omega is yet. I don't know. There's a lot of interesting. I think the clones are way more interesting now because of number one, the Bad Batch, but also because of you've got Temuera Morrison back doing clone stuff. Like, he's Boba Fett. They're doing things with those characters now that I didn't think that they would actually end up doing. So I think the clones and all that kind of culture and the ideas of all of them, it's way more interesting to me now in terms of exploring the psychology behind clones and what it would do to Boba Fett even as an adult, because I think it's super important. But back into the battle. The battle continues while R2 is repairing C-3PO. You get some parallels there with Empire Strikes Back, ring theory, all that stuff. And then eventually all the Jedi are surrounded by all the droids on all sides, and Count Dooku basically says, like, hey, you guys fought worthy, but sorry, this is the end for you guys. And they're all raising their lightsabers. And then Padme says, hey, look. And then above, Yoda arrives just in time with all the clones to save the day. And they basically create a perimeter around them and they're jumping onto the gunships. I love gunships. I think they're some of the coolest vehicles in Star Wars.
Yeah, they're real cool.
I like the sound that they make. Coyote Mundi is blocking those blaster bolts a little too aggressively, in my opinion. He is really into it.
He's into it. I mean, like, you know, he probably doesn't get to leave the council chamber that much. This is probably really exciting for some of these people.
That's true.
I get to leave the office.
That's true. And then in the arena alone, once they've all kind of left and the battle's begun across all of Geonosis, Boba picks up his father's helmet and holds it to his head. And this is, I think, a very iconic image for Boba Fett, right?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, when you sum up, this is really the starting point of who Boba Fett becomes. This is where it's born, right? It could have gone any number of ways under Jango's kind of tutelage, under his, parenthood. Now, this informs everything else that happens to Boba.
Okay, my question is this. Do you think he takes his armor from him at this point, or do you think there's some sort of story that we're missing where he goes back and he gets that armor? Because in the Clone Wars, he's not wearing that yet.
Right. And I mean, that's because it wouldn't fit him yet. But,
true.
But no, I think that we'll probably maybe get a story sometime about him finding his armor again.
And repurposing it.
Yeah.
Maybe even in the Book of Boba Fett.
Just from a logistical standpoint, like, where would he put it? I guess in Slave One.
Because I
guess that's his home, but...
Because we know that he still has Slave One in the Clone Wars, but Ara Singh kind of takes it over.
Yeah.
She kind of makes it her own.
Right. So I don't know that he really has, like, a place to truly call his own for a while.
Yeah, I mean, he just gets taken advantage of at every turn in the Clone Wars, it feels like.
Yeah, he learns a lot of lessons. Once Jango's out of the picture, he has to learn a lot of lessons the hard way.
Which, I kind of hope that we get to see... There was a storyline that was going to be produced for the Clone Wars that they just ended up dropping, but basically Cad Bane would be his last mentor. I really hope we get to see that.
I do too.
A version of that in live action, because that would be really, really cool.
For sure.
So we see really the first big battle, like ground battle, I feel like. I know that we've got Empire Strikes Back, but the way, and also, I mean, the limitations of that time period, you don't get to see a ground battle like we do this for the first time in Star Wars, right?
We've never seen an assault on an entire planet
before.
We've seen like the assault on Echo Base, you know, we've seen space assaults on specific targets, but it's never just been like, all right, the Grand Army of the Republic is now occupying Geonosis.
Yeah.
What does that look like? You know?
Yeah, it's really, really, really cool. So. Yeah. So, okay, we switch to another scene. I'm not going to describe everything that's happening in the battle because it's a big battle. We've all seen it before. In the war room, we actually see the plans for the Death Star behind them as they discuss what to do.
Yep. First glimpse of it, if you're watching, you know, chronologically.
It's really interesting to think about that. Okay, it seems like the Geonosians came up with the idea for the Death Star. Like they're engineers. Like they're the ones that built the Death Star. We find out in Star Wars Rebels and through other media like books and stuff, they actually built the Death Star. And once they were finished building it,
the Empire
eradicated them.
Just sprayed a big can of raid into the hive.
Yeah. So that's awful. So basically they figure, okay, we weren't prepared for this. They're going to have to retreat. There's too many clones. And like I said, we get to see our first glimpse of ground warfare really in Star Wars. They destroy some Federation starships. It's not going well. And then Dooku receives the Death Star plans, which again, he kind of taps. So we get a better look at the Death Star plans, which, you know, I remember that moment being in theater as a kid watching that for the first time. I was like,
That's the thing.
It's when things started really starting to come together, bridging that connection from the prequels to the original trilogy.
Yeah.
I thought that was cool. That was a nice touch by George there.
Yeah, for sure.
And then Dooku, which rewatching it for this purpose, this is the first time I've noticed this. Dooku passes by a ship that flies out to space to get onto a speeder, to go to a different hangar, to get on another ship that will go to space.
Yeah.
Why not just get on that first ship?
It's not his fancy...
He doesn't get the... We don't get that awesome speeder scene of Christopher Lee.
on his little speeder bike. You know, it's just... They needed that shot in there because aesthetics.
I love it. We get more Clone Wars going on. They chase Dooku. Padme falls out of the ship, and Anakin and Obi-Wan debate on what they should do. And Anakin is just like so insistent, like, sit it down, sit the ship down. Like, guys, I would have been like, Anakin, we're miles away from her at this point. We might as well just keep going.
Right. these things can like hover when we get there, you know. Like we can like make a stop. Like
yeah. Yeah. So anyways, they had that whole debate. You see again a lot of Anakin questioning Obi-Wan, kind of questioning his orders, which has been a theme throughout the entire movie, but eventually he relents and they hop off onto the hangar and they run to confront Dooku. And Obi-Wan says, "Hey, we gotta approach this very cautiously." And Anakin says, "No, I'm taking him now." And he just charges and then he's immediately thrown into a wall. What Dooku calls Jedi powers. He says, "My Jedi powers far exceed yours." That's not very Jedi-like, right? That's not what we think of Jedi powers as force lightning.
Right. Yeah, I think that this mostly comes down to a script that not a single person proofread or edited.
I will say, though, I do think the High Republic is like making that kind of work, though.
Yeah.
So like what you see in the Jedi of the High Republic, they do stuff like this, but not from a dark side place. And, you know, Dooku being a very old school Jedi, like from that kind of towards the end of that time period, he might call it Jedi powers, what we would call Sith powers. So,
yeah, separating like.
It's a very KOTOR thing.
It's a very KOTOR thing. I think that's largely where it comes from, right? Because like Luke was force choking in Return of the Jedi. So like separating the actions you use the force for by their like intent, I think is weird. It's always kind of been weird. We've just traditionally thought of it in those terms. Like, oh yeah, lightning, that's only bad guys do that in the movies, so that's a dark side thing.
I really think that came from KOTOR, though, of like you can't do certain things in KOTOR if you are light side, like
right, and like certain force powers push you further in one direction if you like level them up or whatever. Yeah, I don't know. It's always a weird thing.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll one day be in a post that. Fandom where we can Jedi can use force lightning as long as they're doing it for good.
Right. We'll see. Yeah. So Obi-Wan and Count Dooku have more of an old school lightsaber battle, right? Like I remember at first when I saw this in theaters as 12-year-old, I was thinking at first, I was like, oh, this isn't Darth Maul. and it shows, right? Like this is a very Episode 4 type lightsaber battle.
Yeah, more of a mental chess match than a physical competition.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so Obi-Wan is bested, and just when it looks like he's going to die, Anakin jumps back to save the day and is thrown another lightsaber. And in my opinion, two lightsabers is the way to go. If I was a Jedi, if Star Wars was real, I would be the two Jedi lightsaber guy, not a double-bladed or one-bladed guy. Yeah. Two of them.
I honestly think I'd be a single blade guy.
Yeah.
Because every sword fighter who's ever talked about lightsaber fighting says that that's really the only actual thing that would be useful.
That's okay. Two is cool though. I want two different colors. Yeah,
two looks cool for sure.
I like the blue and the green. Like I couldn't decide which one, you know, which color I want. So why not both?
Yeah, I kind of like Ahsoka's color scheme of like the one's really green and then one's more of like a yellowish green.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool.
Yeah. She changes her lightsaber colors all the time.
The white looked the coolest, honestly.
Yeah, I like her with green, though. I like her with green, I think, the best. Then we get another old school battle when Count Dooku immediately destroys his second lightsaber, which was disappointing to me again. And really, you're just kind of seeing the lights on their face, which I think that's really cool to see. And it's, you know, it's kind of a workaround because Christopher Lee is like in his 80s. So right.
You're not going to have him. Yeah. And he's not a fully CGI character like Yoda. So
I do think he's more convincing at it than Ian McDermott is with a lightsaber.
Yeah, I mean, that's because like Christopher Lee probably has fenced before. He just seems like the kind of person who would like you know,
he would
be a fencer, right?
He's probably had an actual sword fight before.
Yeah, like for real.
Yeah.
They do make Count Dooku's like style, his like combat style, more like a fencer. Like he's like one-handed and like one hand behind his back kind of thing. And I liked that, because that would be how someone like Count Dooku, I think, would choose to fight.
Yes, I do like that. So Anakin's entire arm is chopped off from the elbow down, and then he's pushed back. And it kind of seems like, I don't know, in the movie, it kind of seems like Count Dooku is like regretting doing that. Like he feels bad about it a little bit, which kind of, again, I feel like there's more to play there with than the Clone Wars actually did. They just made him
he's pretty hard and fast bad.
Yeah.
Clone Wars. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like there's more to tell there with Count Dooku, of like that struggle of like, am I doing the right thing? Should I be doing this?
Right.
And then Yoda shows up and they basically have a force off.
Which I wish is how the whole thing went, honestly. I know. Like, I wish it was. I just think Yoda is more of a force guy.
He's above that.
He's so proficient and strong in the force that using a lightsaber would actually be a step down for him, if that makes sense.
Yeah, but you've always got to assess things with the rule of cool, though, right? Like,
and yeah, and you can sell a lot of Yoda lightsabers if you have him using a lightsaber.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
That short little handle, you know.
I like lightsaber Yoda. I'm not gonna lie. It's funny when Count Dooku says, "Looks like we're gonna have to settle this with our lightsabers." It's like very Hamilton.
Oh, like, we're what? Having a rap battle now?
Yeah.
We're going to have a breakdancing competition to settle this.
And again, I specifically have vivid memories of this scene in the movie theaters the first time I watched this as a 12-year-old, because this is like the second time I witnessed a theater lose its collective mind. Yeah. Only once before had I been in a theater that just lost its mind like that, which it's become more of a common thing, I feel like, in modern day audiences. But, you know, as a 12-year-old, you don't go see movies and everyone's just yelling and clapping that much. This was right. The second time that happened. The first was Independence Day. So
maybe. Couldn't tell you.
I was six when that one happened.
We won't go into it.
Were you even born?
What year was that?
1996.
Yeah, I was born.
Okay.
The year before.
Yeah. So Dooku manages to loosen a pillar after their fight, and that's kind of what he uses to escape. And Yoda catches it and gently moves it across the room. And then Padme enters on another gunship and goes immediately to Anakin. And then we switch to Dooku ship, which is amazing. Like, that is a really cool ship. I think that thing in front of it, like the sails, act as like a cloaking device, I think, I want to say.
So in real life, we have actually now been able to use solar sail technology in real life, where you can actually we've moved satellites up and down in their constellations, like in their positions in orbit, with solar sails now.
That's cool.
So like, I always thought that was literally the propulsion mechanism for the ship.
Yeah, that would make sense too.
But
can we just talk about real quick how awesome Coruscant is as a planet? Like this shot of Coruscant, of Dooku ship going down to Coruscant, and just the sun setting, especially in that, the works, I think is what it's called, that district of all the, you know, where they make things, but it's incredible. Like, I really wish we had Coruscant in the sequel trilogy.
Yeah.
Looking back, I think that would have been really a nice touch, just to really connect it from the first movie to the last. I just feel like Coruscant to me is like, it's the center of the galaxy. How can you not go there?
Yeah.
Makes sense in the original trilogy because the Rebel Alliance is always on the outer edge hiding.
Right. It's not like you're going to attack the Imperial homeworld. Like, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
Oh, well.
Yeah. I'd like to see a Coruscant really in decline.
Yeah.
like when the environmental impact of making an entire planet a city inevitably comes to...
comes to roost. Yeah. Very Krypton thing happening there, probably. But yeah, I don't know. It's, you know, originally too, when George, he was going to have a whole show set on Coruscant called Underworld and just like everything happening on Coruscant. It was going to be a live action TV show. That's, and they basically, they wrote 40 scripts for it. They even produced like a small little clip of it that we've seen now.
Yeah, and, it wasn't even at pilot level. It was just at like screen concept. Test, proof of concept level. But you can go watch it if you want. Pretty they interesting. Have,
it is interesting though that they, you know, it seems like they've taken some of the scripts and put a lot of those ideas into Clone Wars, into Rebels, and even The Mandalorian, and probably the Book of Boba Fett. I would say the Book of Boba Fett is probably going to line up with the Underworld stuff more than any of that content.
Yeah. For sure. Boba Fett was supposed to be a big kind of player in Underworld, if I'm not mistaken.
And what's kind of shocking is like, this was supposed to be more of an adult type Star Wars thing too, which doesn't seem very George Lucas, but that's the direction they were going with. Like almost like a HBO type Star Wars, very, what is that show? The Wire. It's like The Wire, but in Star Wars. I guess we'll never know.
I don't think we'll ever get that. And I don't really ever want that with Star Wars.
It's a little too extreme. I don't.
For me, so like The Bad Batch, I would say is definitely for an all ages audience. Mm-hmm. Whereas like maybe The Clone Wars and Rebels is for a child audience, and then adults can just enjoy it as well. So yeah. I'm all about getting things that are more explicitly all ages targeted, if that makes sense. But I always want kids to be able to watch everything Star Wars, if that makes sense. Like,
I agree,
just because that's who it's for, you know.
Exactly. So Count Dooku is now with Palpatine, and this is where we learn, I guess this is supposed to be shocking in the movie, Sidious calls him Lord Tyrannus, and it's like,
that name. That
So Sidious has been pulling the strings on both sides.
Duh.
Right.
He's literally a hooded character.
Yeah.
Like, he's always in the shadows.
Like, still does not explain Sifo Dyas, but whatever.
Nope.
Then we switch to a scene in the Jedi Council chambers, and Obi-Wan and Mace discuss if Dooku was telling the truth about Sidious. And then... okay, are we supposed to believe that there's no chairs in here because they're all dead? That's like what I thought when I was a kid, but then obviously in episode 3, they have all the chairs again.
Yeah, I don't know.
It could be a different tower. There's different towers in the Jedi Temple that are very similar, so I'm going to go with now they've retconned that to be a different tower.
That's fair.
And then, of course, Yoda says, "Victory, victory, you say." No, begun the Clone War has. And then we see the clones march into Republic ships as Palpatine and others watch. Bell Organa is very sad in the background, which I think is very good, like character development for someone that we don't get a lot of, but we get a sense of like, this is the guy that raised Leia.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Shout out to Jimmy Schmitz. Got a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame recently, I think. Or is going to... one of the two.
That's cool. And then we have Anakin and Padme get secretly married in front of R2-D2 and C-3PO, and they love each other, and then it's the end.
And then the credits.
The credits. Wow.
What a journey we've taken. We took 4 podcast episodes to talk about 1 movie.
That sounds like us.
It does sound like us.
We go into specific scene-by-scene breakdowns. That's what we do.
Yeah. So if you've enjoyed this, just, you know, keep an eye out for when we start doing the on season, when the Book of Boba Fett's coming out, when all the future live-action Star Wars TV shows are coming out.
That's right.
We'll be doing more of the same thing, talking about all the ins and outs, what we liked, what we didn't like, maybe giving you a little nugget here and there that you didn't already know. Yeah.
I think that's it. I mean,
I think we're done. I think we're free.
You're free of this pain. So if you want more of Children of the Watch content, make sure you join us every Sunday night at 7 Eastern Standard Time as we do a live stream breaking down that Friday's episode of The Bad Batch. And if you're not watching The Bad Batch, you should be watching The Bad Batch because there's been so many connections to The Mandalorian already. Maybe even some connections to the Book of Boba Fett are happening. And so you want to watch this because you want to stay up to date. And then, of course, we'll break it down and tell you everything that you need to know or maybe you missed as well. And it will be on your podcast app after the live stream. We would really, really appreciate if you can go and like any videos on YouTube. That does us a huge favor. We're basically building a brand new audience over on the YouTube. So like and subscribe. All that will help us out. And then you can also leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. That, of course, helps us as well. And if you would like to donate some money to us to help us get better equipment, make the show even better, you can go to our Patreon, patreon.com/TheMandalorianWatch. And you get bonus content like the commentary episodes that we're about to record right after this. We even do book reviews, stuff like that. And then you also have access to the community Discord, which is a lot of fun as well. So a lot of different ways that you can get involved in the podcast and help out. You guys are the best community around. Thank you so much for joining us for this Book of Boba Fett rewatch. We're going to continue the Clone Wars episodes that have to do with Boba Fett, probably in August when The Bad Batch ends. And we'll talk about those probably in arcs. I'm thinking instead of doing each individual episode, we'll probably group certain arcs together and talk about Boba Fett as we make our way closer to the Book of Boba Fett.
Yeah, I think so. Cool, cool. We'll stay tuned for all of that. But until then, keep the watch.